My name is Jim Hogg. I'm a program manager with the C++ compiler team with Microsoft. I actually work on the main campus, which is over in Redmond near Seattle. Welcome to this talk. It's all about how to program the GPU, the graphics processing unit, that we all have in our PC. The actual title that we chose is C++ Accelerated Massive Parallelism, which is, I was thinking just before the talk started, every language has a children's rhyme that is difficult to pronounce, you know. So in English it would be Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled pepper. Right? that's kind of like accelerated massive parallel, right? So I shall call it AMP, right? From now on, I'll say AMP. So here's what I'll go through over the next hour or so. First, set some context, because it's not at all obvious that inside your PC there's a thing called a graphics card, which is used for high-resolution graphics, for gaming, etc. What has that got to do with computing and computation? So I'll say a few words just to set context before diving into the main section of the presentation, which is about the code written in C++ AMP. It struck me many, many years ago that you don't actually understand any subject unless you can write a program to solve it. You know, so whether it's deconvolution or, you know, graphics ray tracing or whatever, unless you can write a program that solves that, problem, you don't really understand it. And even after you have written the program, maybe you don't understand it completely, but you've moved some way along the path. And it's the same here. I think I could describe all of C++ and AMP and the marvellous things it does, which I'll try and cover in the other sections. But ultimately, what gives you a deeper understanding of what's going on is, let's look at some code. I'll do a short section on the IDE, the Interactive Development Environment, Visual Studio. And then finally at the end, I'll try and summarise what we've covered. So I counted my slide deck. I've got like 40-something slides. So my aim is not to just go from slide number 1 to slide number 42 and call it a day. I shall probably veer away from the script. And since the group here is quite small, I'd love for you to ask questions. So as we go, rather than just go through all the slides, what I'd like to do is make sure that you understand each one and we proceed steadily so that at the end of it, you might not know all the details of how you can go program C++ AMP, but you'll have the concepts and the confidence to go investigate further. So as we go, if I say anything that you don't understand, if I use abbreviations that I've not defined before, if you can't understand my strange accent, which is a cross between Scottish and American, just stop me and ask. Any questions at that point? So let me ask first, how many folks program today in C++? C Sharp? Oh, right. Java? So what I'm going to talk about is code written in C++. If you already know C Sharp or Java or Python or anything else, you'll be able to follow the examples easily. How many people have parts of their calculations, parts of their application that does a hefty amount of number crunching? So, you know, you press the button, it goes away for 2 or 3 minutes, and you wish, or maybe 2 or 3 hours, you wish it would run faster. Anybody have that? Great. So before I dive into it, AMP and programming of the graphics processing unit, the graphics card inside your PC, gives you a massive amount of performance increase over what you get from a CPU. And to put that into context, I'll run this example here. So I shall pause the display and explain. Did anyone come to... I did a talk yesterday on C++ 11 features. So, apologies, this is the same demo. Go on, stop. Pause. Let me try that again. Good, it's paused. So this is a demonstration that uses the CPU. It's called an in-body simulation. Anyone here study astrophysics? Yeah. Oh, cool. So I'll come back and explain what's going on afterwards. So this is an in-body simulation. It simulates the evolution of a cluster of stars. And as you can see in the top left-hand corner here, where it says bodies, at the moment it's about 9,000. But what I'm doing is each dot represents an individual body, and they are created with a random position and velocity. We then proceed through the calculation, which takes one particle, calculates the force on that particle due to gravity from all the other particles. So in the case where I start this demo with 4,096 particles, I take the first one, I calculate the distance from there to all the other particles and sum up the forces. And for the astrophysicists among us, the formula is a big G times the product of the two masses divided by R squared, the distance between them. Having calculated all the forces on all the particles, we then take a time step of, I don't know what it would be, I guess maybe a day or a year, right? Calculate the new positions and velocities, and then repeat. Wash, rinse, repeat. So we go through that same calculation again and again. So that gives you some impression of just how big the calculation is. Each particle, 4,095 neighbours. Next particle, 4,095 neighbours. You go round them for each step in the calculation. Well, I'll try this. I'll try start this again. Paused. So, in the top of the screen, I've got the performance monitor for this PC. It has 12 cores. And just at the instant that we're showing here, the second last one is busy. Overall, we're only burning about 9%, that's the left-hand CPU usage, of the PC. And all of it is concentrated on just one core. We have 4,096 bodies. And down below there, that number is the number of gigaflops that we're actually executing on this CPU. So let me just start this calculation going. I'll pause it again. Oh, good. You can see from the figure there, we're getting about 2 gigaflops of processing power out of this machine. And that's just on one CPU that we're burning. So imagine that you were working in a department which did this sort of calculation, and your boss came along and said, you know, this is very fine. 2 gigaflops, it's okay, but I really want it to go faster. We want to see this speeded up. What would you do? Well, we're only using one core, and yet there's 12 cores there. So one step, an obvious step, would be to grab a library that enables parallel processing and change your code around to make use of all the cores. And that's what we're about to do in this demonstration here, where I flip down there and change from a single core to multiple cores. And you can see it's running faster. We're burning almost every core on this on the PC, and you can see that the peaks have risen up so that we are nearly flat out on all 12 cores. And as for speed, we're getting about 12 gigaflops. If we vary the number of particles to give it more work to do, we might get a few more gigaflops, about 10 gigaflops. So we've improved it from 1-ish, 2-ish up to about 10. And that's a big improvement in speed. Your boss might be delighted with that improvement, or he might not. Right? He might come back and say, well, I'd really like it to go faster still. So what's your options? Well, you could buy a bigger PC with even more cores. Or you could use the GPU, the graphics card that's inside that box, right? Every PC that you buy now has a graphics card, and it has available a huge amount of computational power, which we'll see in this next frame. Here I am going to run exactly the same calculation. It's going to be the same starting number of 4096 particles. Have a look at this. Right, it's running about 6 gigaflops, and now I start to run on the GPU. That's really quite phenomenal. If you look at the number of gigaflops, we're up about 190. We can vary the number of particles to give it a bit more work to do. And again, looking at the gigaflops, 390, 370, 385. We'll tweak to find the sweet spot that flattens out the GPU. There we're away up to 41,000 particles. That's a huge amount of computation. It's an n squared law that's going on, obviously. And we flattened that machine out at about 450 gigaflops. That's from the graphics card inside your PC. So how powerful is that? 400 gigaflops, 400 billion floating point operations per second, right? No one here is old enough to remember the Cray computer. Yeah, okay. So it was like it was the supercomputer from science fiction in the mid-1970s. It stood about 6 feet. It was a big round thing. It weighed 5 tons. It was cooled by liquid freon, right? It cost $1 million and more. How do you think that compared with the speed of that graphics card? Well, the answer is the Cray, when you programmed it well, it went flat out at about 250 megaflops. Okay? What we've just seen is about, do the math, 1,500 times faster, something like that. And the graphics card does not cost $1 million. It doesn't weigh 5 tons, right? It costs, if you go to the local hardware store and buy an extra graphics card, you can get them for about $350. Right? So inside every PC that you buy today, there is a supercomputer lurking there, if only you could program it. Question, yeah? Does it scale up with more GPUs? Yes. I didn't show it in the demonstration there, but in fact, the next one in that sequence would show the same calculation, the in-body simulation, but spread across two GPUs, just two cards stuck into the same PC. In fact, using C++ AMP, as I'll show in a few minutes, we can mix and match. One of the graphics cards is made by NVIDIA, which is one of the major manufacturer, the other one by AMD. We can split the calculations across these two, and you get a peak of about a teraflop from these two GPUs. So for those folks that have calculations that take a long time, if you want them to run faster, you should think about a GPU. So my aim from this talk is not to tell you every specific detail about how you can go program a GPU, although we'll cover enough that it will give you confidence to go investigate. What I want to do is excite you so much, right, that when this presentation finishes, you will dash out the door to the nearest Wi-Fi spot and start researching C++ AMP, you know, because the potential is enormous. GPUs for compute processing are probably the most exciting hardware thing to happen in the last 10 years. Huge amounts of power just sitting there, doing nothing most of the time. So how much faster will it go if you go program your GPU? Well, it varies with the application. As the Americans say, your mileage may vary. In other words, in terms of buy a car, the number of miles per gallon or, you know, litres per 100 kilometres, your mileage may vary. And it is the same with GPU applied to applications. So the one that I just showed is astrophysics up in the top right-hand corner. That goes about 100 times faster than just programming on the CPU. And this is a slide from NVIDIA, which shows the sorts of speed-up that they have experienced with their customer base across different types of application. So on the low side, it varies from about 20-ish times. On the high side, 150 times. That's for financial simulation of LIBOR model with swaptions. Does anyone work in finance? So you're probably alone in understanding what that means. I don't. But it goes 149 times faster. Question? Yeah, the one up there, MATLAB is a big calculation engine, very popular. It programs to CUDA underneath and gets, for that particular simulation, 17x. These slides are not talking about C++ AMP, they're talking about programming the graphics card in a different language specific to NVIDIA called CUDA. But again, it gives you some impression of the speed up that's available if you take the effort to go program your GPU. So if you buy a PC, it seems now that there's two different engines inside that you can use for computation. There's the CPU that we've all known, well, we're all familiar with that. You program that in C++ or Python or whatever you choose, and it does what it does. It does much the same today as it did 40 years ago. It's the same architecture. It goes faster than it used to, but essentially it's the same architecture, same programming model. On the right-hand side, we have the GPU, this graphics card. And if you look down there, I won't go through the individual points, but this is a comparison of how the CPU compares with the GPU. And if you look at the left-hand side, well, broadly speaking, it's all bad and all good, right? So when I saw this slide the first time, I thought, this is a slide that's been made by a salesman for GPUs, right? But I checked it out, and it's true. Right. By and large, all bad, all good. Except for the last bullet, which for CPUs, it supports general code. You can program anything on a CPU. Right? We all know that. Any problem whatsoever, you can program and it will execute on CPUs. GPUs, it's great for doing data parallel calculations, but not general purpose calculations. So that's the catch. You know, that's the devil is in the detail, and that's the detail of what the difference is between a CPU and a GPU. So what does data parallel code mean? It means code that you can execute on multiple threads independently. So if you imagine a calculation that we'll show in a second, if I've just got two arrays, right, and I want to add them together element by element, then I could buy, you know, 50 pocket calculators, give one pocket calculator to each person in the room, and then say, well, you take element number 0, you take element number 1, number 2. You could all calculate independently and find the sum of the two arrays and produce the answer. Okay? So that's a data parallel algorithm where you can set off 50, 1,000, 10,000 threads in parallel that execute the instructions, that execute the program, but they don't interfere with each other. And there's a very large number of algorithms that fall into that category, from, you know, financial calculation through reservoir simulation for oil exploration through etc., etc. There's one other catch with programming CPUs compared with GPUs. CPUs, we can use whatever language we want, and as C++ developers, we choose the best. We choose C++. Up until now, if you wanted to program a GPU, you had to use special languages. So there's a variety of them. Perhaps the most popular is CUDA, and if you program in CUDA, it looks like C with extensions. It's lower level than what I'm going to show you, so it takes longer to program and debug and get correct. It runs very well. It only runs on NVIDIA cards. There are other programming languages for GPUs, such as OpenCL, HLSL, and there's a list that goes on for a few more. What we introduced with C++ AMP is the ability to remain with C++ and use that same language for programming either CPUs or GPUs. So, another caution. GPUs suitable for doing, you know, massive computation have been around for maybe 5-6 years. The hardware is evolving rapidly. There's lots of things in motion. We are very fortunate in Microsoft in being able to work closely with the vendors for graphics cards, both NVIDIA and AMD. So we know their product plans, we know what's coming down the line. And therefore, when designing C++ AMP, we've been very careful to make sure that it works on current hardware and future hardware. So there's evolutions coming down the pipeline that, for example, make the CPU and the GPU exist on the same die, so they're closer together. Other things that make them have the same memory, so you don't need to transfer memory from one machine to the other. So you can think of the CPU on one side with its local memory. On the right-hand side, we've got a GPU, a card, with its local memory, and in between, a PCIe bus. So when you want to do calculations on the GPU, you need to transfer data from memory in the CPU across to the right-hand side, do some number crunching, and get the results back again. So, as I say, that is evolving, and you'll see new GPUs coming out over the course of the next year, 2-3 years, which have a different internal architecture and which run even faster than the current generation machines. We're coming to the code soon, I promise, right? So, a few more words on AMP. As I say, it's C++, right? It's not a special version of C with custom extensions. It's C++. It's part of Visual C++. So the question was, is AMP a standard? Not yet. I'll come back to that later on and explain what we're doing in terms of trying to standardize AMP. So, if you open up Visual Studio with C++ in the next release, AMP is there. You just start programming it. You don't need to do anything special. It's fully integrated into Visual Studio. We'll see that later when we talk about editing and debugging, etc. So, what does it do? Well, I mean, what are the extra constructs that AMP has that regular C++ doesn't? Well, it has an STL-like library. So it's got a few extra classes that we've added in, which allow you to program the GPU. One thing that, well, we don't need to explain this, but underneath, just out of interest, we actually run atop of Direct3D. So that's an API that exists on all Windows boxes. If you have a PC that's running Windows, it has Direct3D already embedded. That's how the graphics run. So we work from C++ AMP on top of Direct3D. It's well tested, it's stable, it's now on version 11, it's robust, it goes through driver verification, etc. So you can rely on it, and that's what we use. You don't need to know that, because as you'll see in a few minutes, AMP does not mention Direct3D. But just out of interest, that's what's going on under the hood. Sorry? Why did we choose Direct3D? So the question, why did we do it on top of Direct3D? So Direct3D is the API that allows you access to the GPUs on your machine. As simple as that. So, and it's quite complicated. If you look inside, there's actually, you submit code to in a language called HLSL to the Direct3D, and inside that is transformed down into a bytecode, and finally at execution time it is JIT compiled to the native code for the graphics card. So there's quite a lot of complexity underneath Direct3D, which we just make use of. Oh yeah, so going back. So what does AMP give you? Well, it gives you performance, right? Factors of 20 up to 150. It's just incredibly good at squeezing power out of the hardware that already exists. It gives you productivity because you don't need to go learn a different language for programming the GPU, a different tool set, a different debugger, etc., etc. Just use what you already know from Visual Studio and C++. And finally, it gives you portability. The example I mentioned earlier, where we can run C++ AMP code on any make of graphics card, NVIDIA, AMD, and we can mix and match. So portability, not across different types of PC, we don't run on Linux, for example, but across different hardware in terms of the GPU. So that hopefully gave you some context of what AMP is about. And the next section, which I'm going to move into, is looking at AMP code. So any questions at that point? All right. Start to... So the question was, will Linux support come in the future? Let me take that later at the same time as I talk about standardization. Briefly, we hope so. Right.
Just for the record, portability does not involve you changing anything code-wise.
So question, does portability, as in that last bullet, mean that you need to change the C++ source code? No. No, it's all taken care of below the driver level, and the drivers are provided by each GPU vendor. So NVIDIA has DirectX 11 drivers, and likewise AMD. So it's all taken care of underneath. Okay, so let's move on now to the exciting part, the code, right? So this is the hello world of GPU programming. And let's go slowly. So on the left-hand side, I've written a tiny program that just, what does it do? It adds two arrays together. So it's got a void return, add arrays. It takes A, B, and C as pointers to ints. And it takes an integer n. N is just the size of each of these C arrays. So n could be, 1,000, 5 million, whatever. And all we do is loop through I from 0 up to n, increment I, and all we do is A of I equals B of I plus C of I, right? So nice and simple. Element 0, add them together, and you get A of 0. Element 1, add them together, get element 1. So that's fine, that's easy. We can write that on the CPU. It's a very, very simple program. But how do we now transfer that program to make it run on the GPU to run an awful lot faster? So there's a copy. I've inserted some space. And here's what I need to do to make that little program, that little loop, run on a GPU. So the first time I saw this, I thought, oh, that's quite a few extra lines of code. But I'll try and persuade you over the next 10 minutes that in fact it's not so difficult. So the first thing about the code on the right hand side is that's all you need to do, right? You don't need to buy a different compiler, you don't need to set registry settings, you don't need to invent some wacko XML configuration file. You just do that, right? You just change your source code to that in Visual Studio with a new project inside your solution. So the first two lines are easy. I'm just doing a pound include of amp.h, the header file that has the definitions for our classes and methods. And next, using namespace concurrency, just to avoid some typing down below. Okay. So next, let's look at the body of add arrays, the one that works on the GPU. So the first line's the same, right? We've got three arrays, A, B, and C, C arrays, right, of integers, and an integer's value n just telling us how many elements are in each array. The point to notice next is this parallel for each. That's a construct that we use elsewhere within parallel programming, and it's just a function. It takes two arguments. The first one, va.grid, just describes the shape and the number of threads that I shall launch inside the GPU. The second argument is this funny thing, which is a lambda, which is an inline anonymous function. Have folks looked at C++ 11 yet, the new ISO standard? Have people played around with lambdas yet? Yeah. So, well, not to dig too deep, but a lambda is just a function. It happens to have no name, and you can write it there and then. So if it's a short function that you're only going to use once, just write it down. Ignore that the funny punctuation at the start. It just looks like a function, right? There is the parameter. There's something that I'll describe in a minute. And there's the body in between the left and right braces. V of A equals V of B plus V of C. So it just looks like a function. The thing in front is what designates this as a function with no name, a so-called lambda. So let me describe this grid. It's va.grid, and va up above there is the resultant array. Remember, we're saying A equals B plus C. So why do you need a grid? Well, the answer is that inside here, we're going to launch as many threads, for this example, as there are elements in the output array. In this case, n. So n might be 10,000. I might have a couple of arrays, each with 10,000 elements. I want to add them together, get the result. So I shall launch 10,000 threads inside the GPU. And you might think, that's rather a lot of threads. But a GPU, no problem. It will chomp through 10,000 threads without any problem whatsoever. If you look inside the actual hardware, it will support typically several hundred hardware threads. So inside a GPU such as the ones that you might have in current hardware, you'll get like 480 cores running a thread each. And it swaps the threads in and out so that you can handle, as I say, 10,000 threads easily. But if you think of what each thread is, right, it's going to execute a program, and all the threads execute the same program. They each execute VA equals VB plus VC. But they have to be different. There's no point saying I'll have 10,000 threads all doing exactly the same code. I mean, that's just stupid, right? That's doing the same calculation 10,000 times. They need to differ in some way. Each one does not know anything about its neighbour, but it's given one crucial piece of information, which is this index of I. So the first thread is given the value of I as 0. The next thread, 1. The next thread, 2. That's all they need to work on, because they use that I to tell them which element of the arrays to work on. And they can each work in parallel, completely independent of which other threads are running on the GPU. There's a thing called restrict direct 3D there. This tells the compiler to go look inside the body of this lambda and just check that the only thing we've done is legal, right? Because there's constraints that I can do lots of things on the CPU, but there's certain things I cannot do on the GPU. And I'll explain that later with a list of the constraints. The index is, in fact, what I just described. It's a value, in this case, between 0 and n minus 1. In other words, between 0 and whatever the number was, 9999. And finally, I've got these three things up the top, array view. And each one's similar to its partner. So in the first case, I say array view, and then the template parameters are int, so this is going to be an array view, whatever that is, of ints, and it's going to be one dimension. I'll call it VA. The number of elements in it is this n thing that I passed in as a parameter, and it hooks up to the input array A. And I do the same in the next line, array view VB, array view VC. So I've just made three array views over the incoming arrays. What is an array view then? Well, it's a thing that takes care of some housekeeping on our behalf. Remember the picture I mentioned earlier, CPU on the left with its memory, GPU on its right with its memory, and then a PCI bus between the two. We start with our data on the CPU, right? We somehow need to transfer it across to the memory inside the GPU, run some calculation, get the answers back, and synchronize. Because once we execute that line of code, the GPU will go off and execute on its own. The CPU will continue, right? So somehow we need to say, wait, we've finished the calculation on the GPU, we'll send the results back, stop the CPU so that we're back at a synchronization point. Array view is the thing that takes care of all that hassle and housekeeping. So that's all it is. It's just a little wrapper around a pointer to the real array. Okay. Any questions at that point? Hopefully I've persuaded you that it's not so difficult to convert code that runs on a CPU into GPU code. Right? And for that particular case, that's going to run hundreds of times faster. Okay, because it's so simple, it's so data parallel. So, yes?
Does that implementation change in any way if you would create a different mathematical implementation into which you implement in a parallel fashion?
So, question, how does that change for a different algorithm? So, I might be doing matrix multiplication, I might be doing financial simulation. Yeah, the code itself would change, obviously, to match the new algorithm. But the essence of this array view that passes in data and wraps is the same. I'll show some examples soon. So there are a few classes in the library used to program AMP. First one is index, template parameter is n, and it represents a point in whatever dimensional space you're working. So in the previous example, we had arrays, C arrays. They're just a straight line. So in that case, index was a single dimension, a number between 0 and n minus 1. An extent is a thing in the same number of dimensions. And a grid, I'll skip that for the moment. N can be any number here. So N can be 1, 2, 3 for 1, 2, 3 dimensional calculations, or anything you want. If you operate in a higher dimensional space than the rest of us, right, then you can use AMP to program the calculations. So let me try and explain a bit more what an index is. It's really awfully simple. Here on the left-hand side, I have an extent in one dimension. I call it E, and it's just got six elements. Right? So it's numbered 0 up there, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that's an extent. And up above, I've got an example of an index, again, single dimension. I call it I, and I'm interested in element number 2. If I go into two dimensions, it's similar. There I've got an extent in two dimensions, I call it E, and it's 3x4, so 3 rows, 4 columns. And likewise, an index into that black blob in the middle of that 2D array, or matrix, I, 0, 2. And in 3D, very similar. You need to look at that diagram to figure out which axes come first. But in the example there, it's got I of 201, and it means the first plane is index 0, the next plane going into the board is 1, next one is 2. So that black rectangle is index 2, 0, 1. So let me give you an example. If you're going to do a calculation, let's say we want to calculate the temperature in this room, okay? So I look around the room, I'll measure the size of it. I know that there's some hot spotlights. So the temperature in these might be, I don't know, let's guess, 150 degrees Celsius. The room's got a cool area along that wall, absorbing floor, ceiling that reflects some of the heat. To calculate the steady state distribution of the heat in this room, what I'd do is divide it into a large grid, right? So I'd partition this entire room into a large cube where I've got points maybe 10 centimetres apart. Okay, I'd write down the equations for the heat in this room and then run an amp calculation on the GPU to calculate the steady state temperature. Okay? So I need axes X, Y, and Z. So imagine that corner there is my origin, right? Down here. That's the origin. Let's say that the x-axis runs along there, so I can do 1, 2, 3 meters in the x-axis, let's say 1 meter high, and then 4 meters along in the z-axis. So this point here corresponds to an index of, what did I say, 3, 1, 4. And that point there corresponds, as I say, to a GPU amp index. If instead I'm interested in the cuboid that goes from here all the way to the origin, that's an extent, right? So it's just a volume. So if you were doing a calculation like that, then you would model it with three-dimensional arrays. You would have as many elements along each axis as I have points in my grid, 10 centimetres apart. And the calculation, in fact, is a very simple one. Essentially, you take each point in the grid and assign an initial temperature, and each step round the loop, you say, what's the average of my neighbours, and assign it to that new one. You can do this in a data parallel fashion, runs very fast. Does that hopefully help with what an index is versus an extent? They're in the three-dimensional case, an index is just three numbers, right? And an extent is also three numbers, but it represents a volume as opposed to a point. Question? Yeah. I'll come closer. So the quick, good point. So the question was, it sounds like that is not a data parallel algorithm because I, in calculating one point, look at my neighbours. So the details would be that I'd look at my neighbours, calculate a new value for myself and make a copy into the new array, right? And there's various complications. I can flip-flop between two arrays. I'll leave it at that. So you can cast the algorithm in such a way that it is data parallel. Yeah. Each point in the grid, it has 1, 2, 3. It's got 6 neighbours, and you just take the average of these and assign it to the new point in a new copy of the array. So that way, it becomes data parallel. You don't update the value in place, because that's no longer data parallel. Grid is simply a combination of the two. If I take this box that I described earlier, instead of having it at the origin, I kind of lift it up into the sky, then a grid describes that box with an origin not down in the corner but an index, right? So a grid is just the combination of the two. So here's some examples of more classes in AMP. The first is array. Right? It takes two template parameters, T and N. T is the type of the array. And an array can be multidimensional, and it exists in the GPU memory. So the storage lives on the accelerator. N is the number of dimensions. So in the three-dimensional calculation that we just talked through, I'd have an array typically of float 3. So the example I've got in the black box there shows a vector of int v, and I've got 96 elements. So that just exists on the CPU. That's the C++ code that we all know and love. Down below, I declare an extent in two dimensions. I call it e, and I give it the dimensions 8 by 12. And then I declare an array. That's the thing that lives in the GPU memory. Again, it's an int in two dimensions. I'll call this one A, and I shall populate it with the contents of E, starting at V begin and going to V end. So that's a way to populate memory inside the GPU with numbers from memory inside the CPU. And in doing so, I've changed it from a single dimensional vector, V of 96, to instead a view that looks like a two-dimensional thing, which is 8 by 12. So it's a kind of, does anyone know SQL? SQL programming and databases and views? This is kind of like a view. It's the same underlying data, but just viewed as a 2D array as opposed to a 1D. Inside the body of a lambda, that thing that's the kernel of the code that we're going to execute on the GPU, I have an index in two dimensions called I, and I'm interested in the number at 3,9. So up there on the right hand side we have the 8 by 12 matrix, and the square in blue, I don't know if, does that show up? That one there? It's at location 3,9, and I would index that using the variable I. Simple as that. Any questions there? Yes.
What we have is the data sizes are so huge you can't pick up it in memory. So I mean, do you have to break it down before you pass it to the graphical the GPU?
So question, what happens if the data doesn't fit in memory? And the answer is, for current generation systems, you need to take care of that as a programmer. But to put things into context, the calculation that I showed earlier with the n-body simulation, that was 4,000 particles. How much memory do you think that takes up? It's actually not very much. You've got, for each particle, you've got three positions, three components of position, three components of velocity, and a mass. 30 bytes. Oh, yes. So for like reservoir processing or seismic, you would need to do the calculations such as in current generation to split it up manually so that it goes through the GPU, does the calculation, and comes back. And in terms of how much memory do you get on modern GPUs, it's typically 1, 2, 3, 4 gigabytes. So it's substantial, but I take your point. In seismic, yeah, you've got a lot more. So looking far ahead, there's work underway, experimental work, to be able to do in the same way as an operating system does paging for us, so that if the calculation does not fit into physical memory, it will page back and forward between disks. There's experimental work going on to investigate doing that for GPUs as well, which would make your life simpler code. The array view that I mentioned earlier is a wrapper around an array. Array is the thing that... Yes. Go up.
Right.
Sorry, say that again? So the question, when do we actually consume memory and move it? So in that case there, the memory consumption is done there when we populate the array from the CPU contents. In the earlier examples I showed, where we had an array view, there's a little bit magic goes on there. the first access on the GPU to any element of the incoming arrays does the copy for us silently. So it's a copy on demand. And again, it hides that complication from us. There's an array view. It's just a wrapper around a pointer to an array. The example I have there of a vector of int, again this is CPU side, called v, and it's got 10 elements. I declare an extent e in two dimensions, 2x5, and then I declare an array view using that e. I can do the thing, and I usually do, just in one statement that says array view int in two dimensions. I've called it a, it's 2x5, two rows by five columns, and it is an array view of the vector v. Okay, so you can ignore that thing, just that's how you would normally write it. So of the various classes we've seen so far, we've talked about arrays and array views. They're very similar. I'll let you just read down. I'd recommend array views. They're so much more user-friendly. They take care of lots of copying backwards and forwards. So to get up and running, use array views. I'll mention one tiny thing there, in case someone notices that the capture mechanism for the lambdas is by reference for arrays. That's a slight cheat in that it's really copy return semantics. So we take an array in the CPU, move it to the GPU, do calculations, and then move it back again. It's not a genuine reference, right? But we write it that way. Okay, so let's delve into a little bit more of parallel for each, which is the entry point. It's kind of like the front door for doing parallel programming on the GPU. And we've got a statement here that says parallel for each. G is the grid that just tells us the shape and size of the calculation we're going to do. We have the lambda that starts there, its body. We call that kernel code, not to be confused with operating system kernel code. This is graphics kernel code. Go back. So I'm now going to go on and describe certain chunks of that construct, starting with restrict. So we've seen in the previous slides the use of this restrict keyword, and it's always said afterwards restrict Direct3D. So restrict is an extension to C++ that we've made, and it applies to functions including lambdas. Why? Why is it there? Because we can do some things on the CPU, but we can only do a subset of these things on the GPU. And we use the restrict keyword to spell that out so that the compiler can check for us that the code is going to execute successfully when we run it. So here are some of the restrictions for code that runs on the GPU. It can only call other restrict Direct3D functions, right? So it can't be chomping away through numbers on the GPU and decide, you know, I really want to call something on the CPU now. We don't do that. If it's chomping away numbers on the GPU, it can call other functions, but these functions need to be executing in the GPU. We must be able to inline all the functions. That's how today we gather them together. On restricted functions, we can only use these particular types. Signed or unsigned int, 32 bits. Floats, which are 32-bit floating point numbers. And doubles, which are 64-bit. Structs and arrays of these types. And then some more, which I'll let you read. There's no point reading through that. There's other things that you can't do on GPUs. Remember earlier I said that, you know, CPUs, GPUs, fantastic, right? Here are some of the catches in terms of GPUs for what you can't do. So we can't do today recursion, right? We can't write up a program that has functions that call themselves because we don't know how much stack space to allow. We can't support volatile in a GPU. I'll skip that. You could spend 2 hours talking about volatile, but we'll just move on. You can't support virtual functions, pointers to functions, etc. Likewise, you can't do go-tos in GPU code. Shouldn't use go-tos anyway. Right? You can't do throw, try, catch, etc. So there's a bunch of constraints which you might think would get in your way, and they would for some advanced algorithms, but even with these restrictions, you can do a huge amount of algorithms on GPUs. Another thing to mention that you don't need to write all of the code yourself. We shall be producing libraries of code that do neat things for you on GPUs. So, for example, if you do fast Fourier transform, as in Seismic, you might think, well, how do I do sort? How do I implement a quick sort on a GPU that's got this strange data parallel architecture? Answer, you don't. You do another one called Bytonic sort, so which nicely maps to data parallel hardware. So again, we'll be providing a library of useful functions that you don't need to code yourself. So what sort of calculations don't work well on data parallel hardware? Oh, things like trees, directed graphs, they're kind of difficult, right? So I said that we've got the restrict keyword as an extension to C++, right? We try to avoid extending C++, right? We have the compiler, so we could run wild and extend it in all sorts of directions, but we avoid doing that for two very good reasons. One, we want to remain as compatible with ISO C++ as we can. Second, there's an architect called Herb Sutter, whom you may have heard of. I think he's the current chair for the ISO C++ committee. He works in our team. So if he hears a whisper that we are thinking of extending the C++ language with a keyword, he comes round and visits us. Right? However, we've made one exception to use restrict. And the reason for that is that by using it as a keyword, we can make use of that keyword in function overloading. So in the first case, I've got an example, a function called bar takes a double, returns a double. And I've said the restrict on that is CPU or Direct3D. So the code for that, inside the body of the code, it can execute on CPUs or GPUs, doesn't matter, it's fairly simple. Next example, I've got a function cos, mathematical cos, takes a double, returns a double. I've got no restrict on there, so that means that will run on the CPU. The next version of cos, I've said restrict Direct3D, and that means that that version can only run on the GPU. Remember, the CPU, eventually all code ends up as machine code and the instruction set for the thing that you're running on. And GPU instructions are wildly different from CPU instructions. Okay. So in the example there, I've got some method, and inside I have a call there, D1 equals bar. So that's okay. The code for bar could have run on CPU or GPU. There, I've got D2 equals cos of something. So which one should it choose? Because I've got two versions of cos. And the answer is it chooses the second one, because it knows here this body is restricted to running on the GPU, and therefore it makes use of the second one. So without making restrict a keyword, we could not have achieved that. So that's why restrict is the only extension we've made to the language. What I'm going to go on to do now is a slightly more complex example, which is matrix multiply. So does everyone remember how to do matrix multiply from back in school? Yeah, I'd forgotten too. So after checking with Wikipedia, I've got two arrays. I've got A, which is a 3x7. I've got B, which is a 7x10. And I want to matrix multiply them together to get a C, which is going to be a 3x10. And the calculation goes like that. C is going to be A multiplied by B. And I don't know which one you find easiest, but what we're going to do is take, in order to calculate that element, we're going to take that row and that column, and we're going to say that times the top one plus that times the second top one, right? We're going to take what's called the dot product or the inner product of that row and that column and end up with the value there. And then we're going to do that for each element in the resultant array. It's all coming back from school just like a fresh nightmare. Yeah. On the left-hand side, there is the calculation written for the CPU. I've started with a typedef vector of float vec, just to save some typing down below. And I've got a function, matmul, that takes a vec ref for A, for B, for C, and our familiar int n, which is the size of the matrix. In this case, I've simplified it. This is going to be a square matrix, right? And there's the calculation. Kind of simple. The only nasty thing in there is that A, the element of A that I'm interested in two dimensions, I need to do a little bit of calculation there to figure out which element it is. How does that look on the GPU? Well, very, very similar. We've got these three array view things that we explained previously. They're just wrappers around the incoming vectors, right? They just take care of the housekeeping of moving things backwards and forwards. And then instead of a raw for loop, we're using the parallel for each with two arguments. One, the grid that tells us the shape of the calculation. And two, this thing here, which is a lambda, and there's the function body. It just calculates I and J. Remember, each thread kind of pops into existence and only knows one thing that's different from its neighbour, which is its index, the IDX. So it just makes local variables for I and J, sets the element that was on the C array equal to, on the A array equal to zero, and then runs around the loop, summing them up. Okay, taking the dot product. So that's all there is to making the calculation run on the GPU instead of CPU. Question? So the question was, there's a whole pile of complex stuff happening under the hood. Why did we stop there and say, why not make array view the default, rather than just have these arrays and array views? So it's a balance. Array views are very convenient, but if you want extreme performance, you know, instead of making it 80 times faster, you want it to go maybe 90 or 100 times faster, you'd drop to a lower level and use raw arrays and explicit copies. So you have the choice with this way of doing it. I've been talking about the GPU as if there were only one, but there can be several inside your box. So there's another class to take care of that, called the accelerator and the accelerator view. And again, the picture there is on the host, on the CPU, I've got a bunch of cores, I've got some system memory. Across the PCI bus, I've got this other device, or multiple devices, which are GPUs, graphics cards, each with their own memory of a few gigabytes each. In terms of what I can do with the accelerator class and the accelerator view, well, in the middle example there, which I've not shown, you can enumerate how many graphics cards you have on your box. You don't need to know in advance. You can detect that at compile time. You can allocate arrays there. into not the default GPU, but the GPU that you pick. So again, you can split your calculations across multiple GPUs. So that gives all the power that you require to do multi-GPU programming. We've run quickly through these classes that comprise the AMP language, the AMP library. Yourself?
Is there support for on-CPU GPUs, like the new Intel 2600K?
Excellent question. So the question was, I'm talking just now about GPUs. Could AMP code be compiled instead to run on multiprocessor machines from specifically Intel, where they are kind of heading down their own direction? They do not support GPUs in the same way that NVIDIA and AMD do. Instead, they reckon that multiple cores, CPU cores, is a better way to go. So they've announced a new chip called Knight's Corner, which not available yet, but that will have on a single die 48 cores. So going back to the question, could AMP be compiled to run on these sorts of machines as opposed to GPUs? And the answer is yes. We've done that to a certain extent, that we run on a CPU today with multiple cores and vectors in a kind of emulation. It's not as fast as the GPU, but the code does execute. So answer, yes. It doesn't. So the integrated graphics chips with Intel don't support the DX11 driver spec that we require to work on. That may change. I hope it does. Yes?
On the previous slide, it appeared that you have to program yourself which GPU is used. Will it balance itself across multiple GPUs if there are multiple GPUs available?
So question, on the previous slide, I was programming explicitly. If I had three GPUs and I wanted to use all three of them, I did that manually. Is there a way that it will auto-balance across all the GPUs? Not at the moment, no. No, you program them explicitly. Uh-huh.
If I've got an NVIDIA card and an AMD card,
yep.
The NVIDIA cards have got a floating point unit in every single core,
yep.
And the AMD cards haven't. Can I have a certain piece of code use one single specific card rather than...
Yeah, you would there be making use of... So the question was, these cards differ in their support for different types.
Yeah,
for example... Certainly, yeah. You just program as if they were independent GPUs. So, yeah, that works. Yes?
Another question.
Uh-huh.
If we use a graphics card to show 3D things moving.
Yep.
If you want to use the same graphics card for these calculations, is it possible? Does it interfere?
Yeah, so the question, can I use the same graphics card for both display and calculation? The answer is yes. In fact, these demos were doing precisely that. There's tricks that you can play that, for example, if you've done the calculation to get, say, the N-body simulation, all of the results exist in GPU memory. Rather than transfer them back and then display them, there's lower-level routines that you can say, just use the buffer that's currently in the GPU. But you can use the GPU for both display and calculation. Or if you want to go faster, just buy an extra GPU card. They cost about $300. So $300 for a supercomputer, and off you go. I shall skip the next part, which is about more advanced programming using a technique called tiling, which makes the thing go even faster. Bear with me. We'll get to the interesting part in a second. if you want to make use of what we call tile static memory, you need to have a bit more complexity in your code. It's exactly the same matrix multiplication as I had before. Well, sorry, it's like C equals A times B. So the same calculation, but there's a bit more code, the stuff in yellow there, that makes it run faster. You get exactly the same answer, you just get the answer more sooner. And that's because inside a GPU, it's fairly complex. There's hundreds of cores. They have their own registers. They have different types of memory, like global memory, local memory, texture memory, etc. There's one kind that we call tile static that is faster to access than global memory. It's like 10 times faster. So if you make use of that through tiling, the calculation will go, you know, maybe instead of 80 times faster, it'll go 130 times faster. So you get a performance increase. Again, your mileage may vary. I shan't go through the details of that. So that completes the overview of the library that comprises AMP. It's fairly small and yet opens up the power to squeeze performance from the graphics card. There's a bunch of other stuff that I won't cover. And that completes the section on code. That's the heavyweight part. Questions?
Is there any way to synchronize the separate threads? Let's assume you've got a picture and you want to make some kind of histogram of it. The histogram will be accessed by all the threads. Is there some way of synchronizing it?
So question, what about synchronization of the multiple threads within the GPU? Yeah, again, that's stuff that I've not touched on, but within a tile you can do synchronization with tile barrier you maybe saw passing on one of the slides there. So yes, it is possible to have the threads running, you know, in parallel, and then say within a tile stop at a synchronization point. So, but there's no time to go into the detail, unfortunately. Okay, so that covers the code. I'll briefly mention support within Visual Studio. Who uses VS? Yeah, it's just brilliant. If you're a developer, you probably spend an awful many hours per day in the debugger, right? I say that it's fantastic. I used to use Visual Studio before joining Microsoft. I was working on a different operating system, writing device drivers, and Visual Studio was so good, we wrote a user mode emulation in Windows and used VS to debug our code before moving it to the other machine. I love Visual Studio. So as you know, there's all of these things that you can do inside VS, and if you spend your day there, that's more than familiar. What about when you're trying to program graphics, the graphics card? Does that suddenly become mission impossible? And the answer is we've done huge amounts of work, both for the concurrency viewer, which used to work in VS 2010 for multiple cores. We've extended that to support multiple GPUs and multiple threads within them. So the concurrency view, it supports a view which is direct 3D centric. So it's the layer of abstraction down below AMP, right? But we're working to raise that abstraction level. It allows you to analyze performance stuff. Like, for example, I mentioned memory copies. If you've got small buffers going backwards and forwards lots of times, your performance is not going to be so good. But memory copy display will give you indications of how you can change that to make it go faster. Finally, within the debugger, that's a view of the window. So within the debugger window for a regular CPU, you want to have the source code, you want to be able to set breakpoints, you want to be able to single step, you want to be able to look at the locals window, the auto window, the watch window, so you can spec variables. You like to hover over a variable and see its current value. All of that has been enabled for the GPU with a huge amount of work. So everything that you want to happen for the CPU also works for the GPU. So there's, briefly, the list of features that we have added. I shall finish off with a summary and 40 seconds to go. C++ AMP provides you performance for mainstream programming, right? So it used to be a niche area that if you wanted to make use of all the cycles available on your GPU, you had to learn a different language and jump through hoops to make it happen. With AMP, it suddenly becomes a lot easier. It's in C++, it's not C. It's integrated with Visual Studio, and it abstracts away all the details, the horrible details of what's inside that platform. Coming back to answer the questions on standardization and portability across platforms, we've now published the AMP spec as open. It's available. I could give you the link, but it's easier to just go to your favourite search engine and find it. If you have a few hours and a C++ compiler, a few hours to spare, you can download that spec and implement support for AMP over the weekend, right? We've worked together with NVIDIA and AMD on that. So we had meetings going back to, I started around about October. So for the last umpteen months, we've been meeting regularly with these two companies. And the spec that we've now published is supported by all three of us. The aim for us is to make C++ AMP the preferred way of programming GPUs. We want it to spread around the world like a virus on all platforms because we believe it's a better way of programming that nasty hardware. And we're currently in negotiation with several compiler vendors, of which there's not many on the planet, to try and get support for AMP in their compilers on multiple platforms. And that's me done. Any questions?
Does that mean that AMP is set to take over CUDA and OpenCL?
So question, will AMP supersede CUDA and OpenCL? I hope so. In reality, one question would be, how close does C++ AMP come to performance compared with CUDA and OpenCL? It comes close. Again, your mileage may vary, but we look for numbers within 10 to 20% of coding it in raw CUDA. So we balance ease of use against extreme performance. So if you have an algorithm that today takes 10 hours and you would like it to run in 3 minutes, then you can probably do that with C++ AMP. If instead you want it to run in 2.5 minutes or 2 minutes, you would go to a lower level API like CUDA. Maybe these numbers that I just dreamt up are unfair, but the balance is, we aim for the 80% of what can be achieved by lower-level programming. Any more questions? Okay, thank you very much.